Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your loving host. It is me, Todd Conklin. Wait, did I class it up a little there? An aria from Turandot. Puccini, if you will. I actually really like that. And it's just a, you know, just a little classing it up because today's podcast is a keeper. So I don't even know where to start. So Sidney Decker's the guest today, and he's got a new book that came out this last week, I think. Maybe the week before, but I think it's last week, The End of Heaven. And it's by far one of the more interesting and thought-provoking and intimate looks at kind of what we do and how complexity really puts us in a position where the hunt and the seductiveness of cause is just that. It's a hunt. It's a construct. It's seductive. But in a complex world, we just have to step up to the plate and say, we have systems that live inside of systems that live inside of systems. And that as good as we are, and we're good, and as great as people are, and as adaptive as they are, bad things still happen. And this book talks about that in really only the way Sidney Decker could talk about it. It's interesting. It makes sense to me too. When you look at where Sidney is in his life and the journey he's on and been on, and it's this book sort of is a stock take. It looks forward and it looks backwards, and it asks some pretty hard questions. And so I wanted to talk to him about it because I think you would want to hear it. And it's that good. It really is that good. The other thing that came out of this is Sidney and I are going to have an open workshop in San Francisco. And it's something we've wanted to do in the United States. We've done them all over the world, but we've wanted to do one in the United States. And we're going to get the chance to do it. Sydney's coming over this summer. In fact, that open workshop's going to be June 9th, if I can put a little promo in there. He's coming over this summer, but every other workshop he's doing, you can't go to because they're private. And, in fact, you're not welcome. Not that he's not friendly, but you're just not welcome. But this one is absolutely open doors to anybody. Bring your boss. Bring your friends. And I think it's going to be interesting. We talk about that towards the end of the podcast. I think you'll find this podcast one that is worth listening to. I know you'll find it interesting. And I started with an opera. Come on, give me some credit for this. I'm classing this joint up a little bit. So let me not belabor this because I want to get you onto young Dr. Decker as fast as we possibly can. So sit back and relax. This is Sidney Decker and Todd Conklin. Oh, that's me. I shouldn't talk about myself as if I'm not here. This is Sidney Decker and I, and we're talking about just a conversation about Sidney's new book and the meeting we want to have with you and everything else. So just sit back and enjoy. So talk to me about the new book.
So thanks, Todd. This is a very special book. I think this is my most personal book to date. It's also quite thin. If people are not interested in lugging a thick book around, then they won't be bothered by this one. It's called The End of Heaven, Disaster and Suffering in a Scientific Age. And it just came out a few days ago.
It looks phenomenal. It just looks phenomenal. And I'm really pleased to know you're writing thinner books because I think thinner books sell better.
Well, I don't know about that. But There's a trade-off. I noticed that as I was leafing through it, I don't really usually read my own books because, you know, what's the point? I just wrote the thing. As I was looking at some of the things in there, I was going, "Wow, that's a lot of thoughts inside of that page." You know, that's see, if I wanted to, it could have been much thicker. But the trade-off then it becomes airier and fluffier and. Less to the point and less meaty in some sense. And I think this is something, I mean, I've heard that before, that some of the readers really like the readability on one end. I mean, they always say that, but also there's meat and substance to almost everything that's there, right? This is worth spending time on that sentence. Wow. And so that's a compliment.
Why did you tackle this? I mean, why at this point in your career, at this point in your book writing career, for sure, why this little snapshot into sort of the deeper personal Sydney Decker?
Yeah, that's good. That's a very good question. Why now? I think we owe it to your listeners to perhaps say a little bit about what's in the book as we answer that question, or even perhaps before we answer that question. But let me venture into it now anyway. The why now? When I look back on the last 20 years, Todd, I think I've spent many occasions, and as have you, right, in our little own laboratories of pain and loss and suffering and grief and disbelief. You just told me that you came back from a little mini conference of stakeholders involved in the aftermath of fatalities inside of companies. And even though they may be relatively remote personally to the people who lost their lives, I am sure it affects them in ways and at levels that are rich and varied. And I think this is consistent with your experience. As you spend time in those little, you know, micro settings or micro laboratories of pain and loss and suffering, these are places where there's always a struggle going on to restore a sense of order, a sense of fairness. As in, why did this happen? Right? People want some explanation. They want some idea of why was it us? Why did it happen this day? Why with these people? Why in our company? Why to my family member? As I spend time with people involved in the aftermath of these terrible events in various worlds, aviation, healthcare, obviously, resources. I can't ever recall being there as a detached, dispassionate scientific observer. I cried with a nurse who was involved in and implicated in the medication death of a 3-month-old. I spent many hours with pilots under house arrest in an Asian country who had been involved in an accident that cost the lives of more than 80 people, and amazed by the sources of their resilience and their ability to actually live on. I see in front of me the air traffic controller of the Überlingen accident having dinner in my house not long before he was murdered by the father and husband of a couple of the victims of the mid-air collision. What I started to wonder about, and what I started to struggle with myself, given those encounters, was that we have become ever better. And when I say we, I mean in science, in investigations, in people who professionally do this stuff, not grief counseling, but, you know, understanding why these things go wrong. We've become, I think, ever better in understanding and explaining why these things go wrong, why these failures happen. We've got, when you look at the last 30, 40 years, there is, you know, since the 1970s, Barry Turner and lots of others have started writing and theorizing about how these things fail, why complex systems produce death and destruction, why, in fact, systems that are set up to make people better or guarantee safety do exactly the opposite. And you and I would immediately agree that not all of the theories produced by all of that effort are equally useful. Some might, in fact, send us down rabbit holes that don't produce anything meaningful but the illusion of a cause. But as you know my writings, and some of your listeners may know my writings, I defer to the complexity of these systems. And one of the books, Drift into Failure, takes that head on and says, let's use complexity theory to try to understand how these failures are caused by interactions, by this concatenation of all kinds of things coming together that normally produce success but occasionally produce failure. And the better we get at that, the better we get at illuminating, right, this sort of complexity behind disasters, the more we discover, and this is really quite disheartening, that in many cases, these things weren't caused by single people who screwed up. These were not caused by evil minds or evil intentions or a single part that broke. The more seriously we try to investigate why these complex things go wrong, the more disconcerting it can get, because the less clear the causal picture behind it actually becomes. When you get right down to it, you look at the banking crisis, the 2008 collapse, you look at space shuttle disasters, Columbia, Challenger. For sure, we can tell ourselves sort of this lullaby that we found the broken part, that we found the miscreant human being, that we found the evil person behind it. That's all really cute. And it's both a lullaby and a witch story at the same time that can lull us to sleep, thinking that, oh, we got this under control. But if you're serious about this, then you discover very quickly that ultimately these were organizations made up by people like you and I. Made up by people like your listeners, like normal people in a normal organization that was doing normal things that everybody thought were really quite under control and normal at the time. And I'm sure that the stakeholders you talked with yesterday were living in the same impression, under the same impression, that their organizations were, normal people doing normal things, and boom, there's a death. Where does that come from? Now, the better you investigate, the better you try to set up an understanding according to complexity theory, the more you begin to discover that these are normal processes. These are really everyday, banal, very normal things. The fact that that something is broken is not unusual at all. This is why we have minimum equipment lists on airplanes, right? Because you can fly around with stuff that's broken. Yeah, at some point, we reach the limit at which how much we accept that's broken. But basically, there's always broken stuff on airplanes, right? Same with healthcare, right? We want to believe that things go wrong when people miscommunicate, when they make errors, when there's miscalculations, when there's hierarchical issues or gender issues or people not following protocols and violating procedures and guidelines. That's when things go wrong. Again, when you study this seriously, as you have, and of course as my group has, is what we see is even when things go right. When things go right, people miscommunicate, people do miscalculations, people violate procedures, people don't follow the guidelines, people have gender issues across hierarchies in healthcare. I mean, and yet things go right. So it's seductive, tempting to point to a broken component, to a, oh, it's all about communication, or to a procedural violation. Like some colleagues in the business do, right? We want 100% compliance, right? And that's perhaps a nice aspiration, but you either comply 100% or you get the bloody work done, right? And so, that's true for almost, there's always a distance between work as imagined versus work as done. And, and everybody who seriously studies this knows that, right? And so, but that leaves, and I think, and man, I'm quite adrift now no pun intended, in some of the earlier work, but it leaves us with nothing to fix. It leaves us with no hope, because what we want to do when in the face of this suffering that you and I have met up very close, and undoubtedly many other people who are listening have, We want to put the finger on it and say, this is the source of suffering. This is the nucleus. This is where it comes from. This is where all the pain emanates from. This we need to deal with, right? And so there's this constant tug, this push-pull. On the one hand, our theories make us smarter, but more callous, all right? They don't give us this solace, this consolation that we now have found the source of suffering. And all will be well once we deal with that source, because our theories don't point to that source. They make it more difficult and more illegitimate to point to that source, because it means we've done a shitty investigation. If you say, oh, this is the cause, really? Right? I mean, that no longer is really a credible thing to do today. So it's that tension, Todd, that I'm trying to explore in this book.
And I think it's remarkable, because becoming more in touch with really the holistic nature of the notion that they're in a complex system that mostly doesn't fail, that failure doesn't give us the one broken spring, the one broken nut. And we have to, I think we have to deal with that technically and operationally, but we also deal with it emotionally. And by that, yeah. I think we suffer and hurt when failure happens, but we also help organizations really almost grieve in a way, so that they can actually restore their ability to come back the next day and start the process again and have faith in humankind and faith in their systems and faith in what they do. And that balance, I think, is really very significant. And I'm really quite touched by this book. I think this is really quite remarkable. I think you should feel proud.
Thank you. Thank you. This is, I think, the other background against which I wrote it, which is explicitly in some sense theological, although I am not a theologian and not qualified to write a theological book, but is of course the idea, as Max Weber would have us believe, and argued for quite clearly, that we tend to seek refuge in religious explanations when we are confronted with inexplicable suffering, right? And you know, great scholars like Bart Ehrman at Princeton and others would have commented on this much more deeply and wisely. But interestingly, when you look at many explanations offered by religious traditions, they sometimes, at least some of them, pull away from this complex understanding, because they too would point to rule violations, right? Not following the law of, right, whichever the divine is for the particular tradition in which you grow up, that is at the root of the suffering, that is the cause, right? And so I committed for this particular book to study that much more deeply and to, again, it's not reflected in the thickness of the book, which I hear you are thankful for that. And I think I am too, and we all should be, because you can write about this until the cows come home, right? Because it's thousands of years of human thinking and ideas and religious inspiration and all of that. So, it's called sort of the classical explanation, right? That we suffer because we violate a rule. And interestingly, you can trace that idea, which of course stems from, stems from multiple religious traditions, but we've inherited that through the Judeo-Christian tradition. A particular scholar, Augustine, a bishop in North Africa in the Middle Ages, wrote about this particular model quite a bit. One of his most avid readers turned out to be John Calvin, right, who was in fact a lawyer in France, right, which is where we know Calvinistic comes from. And of course, being Dutch, this is the tradition I was brought up in, right? And so
you really can't escape it being Dutch.
No, this is very true. I do, not living in the Netherlands, I do get reminded of that in very many ways, cultural and otherwise. The only thing that sort of attenuates that is to be married to a Dutch girl, right? So that sort of normalizes our Dutchness, at least in the home city. Yeah, but when you look at so Calvin reads a lot of Augustine and develops what Weber beautifully called sort of the Protestant ethic, right? And which has always been credited nicely and interestingly enough with the success of, for example, the United States, which Weber visited toward the end of the 19th century and saw both wonderful and horrific things. I mean, he was in fact, mind you, this is interesting, Weber, Max Weber, a German sociologist, one of the holy trinity of sociology, right? Durkheim, Marx, and Weber. Yeah. So he's one of them. And so Weber was shocked at the workplace safety conditions in the U.S. at the end of the 19th century.
Remarkable, really.
It was, and seeing them as hugely inconsistent with what he was used to by then from a relatively better protected German workforce at that time already. I say relative. But Weber says, okay, there's this Protestant ethic. And what is that? Well, it is the idea that through hard work and through commitment and dedication and effort and compliance and making sure we stick with the rules but particularly our own individual hard labor, we create success for ourselves. And it is that Protestant ethic that, at least that's the Weberian idea, that made the United States to what it was at the end of the 19th century and the early 20th century. And so, but what's the flip side of that model? The flip side of that model is clearly that if you're not successful, if you suffer, if you screw up, if there's failure around you, if you're involved in a failure in an organization, guess what? The Protestant ethic, if you flip it upside down, then immediately can predict and explain that the reason for that is that you didn't try hard enough, that you didn't do your best, that you didn't dedicate yourself, that you weren't engaged enough, that you weren't committed enough, right? And it's so easy for that to see show up in our daily discussions about why things go right or wrong, particularly, I think, in your country.
It's so funny, too, that you would – well, I had a dog in grad school that I named Max Weber, so I'm right there with you on that.
Okay, that's disturbing.
Yeah, it was, and it was a pretty disturbing dog, too. So that's a different podcast. But it's so interesting because one of the things we talked about in this rather exclusive meeting was the fact that if we see a fatality as a moral failure.
This is not the adult, right? This is with the stakeholders just yesterday. You
know? Yeah, yeah.
Right.
If we see a fatality as a moral failure, then we've sort of predestined the organization to go out and atone for its sins, to really confess to the moral failings. And in fact, I think that direction leads us as we respond and restore from some kind of catastrophic failure in quite the wrong direction. And I think it's rooted deeply in the very things you're talking about. That's exciting. This book,
isn't it? Well, but there's a nuance taught to what, and you must have experienced that yesterday too. I think if an organization collectively considers a fatality that happens within its workplace a moral failure, I think that would give rise potentially to a useful discussion. I think if we abdicate and slide back into saying, no, this was the moral failing of a individual, that's why they died. That's when we concede defeat. That's where we go off the rails.
And I think it's the latter of the two. I've noticed, I don't know if you've followed it, but politics in the United States took a kind of an odd turn.
It's impossible not to follow.
but
wherever you are,
it's interesting to think this way and frame it with Paul Ryan talking about the makers and the takers, or the fact that we can build a relatively interesting argument that poverty is a function of moral failing,
that
good people aren't poor, but bad people must be poor. It's the same thing.
Same thing, Protestant ethic alive and well.
Yeah,
wow.
It's thick. This is a great conversation, but we have one other thing we have to talk about.
Oh, man.
We can go forever.
This is chapter two of, I don't know, like 10 chapters. It doesn't matter. We'll have to have 10 podcasts, one for each chapter. But one thing before we talk about that, though.
Go ahead. You got it. The microphone is yours.
Oh, well, that's incredibly dangerous. You know, if people are listening to this on their way to work, they're never going to get to work, or they're not going to get out of the parking lot. You know, well, depending, you know, suppose that they want to keep listening to me. As my mother-in-law said, Sydney, I can't imagine having to listen to you for half an hour. You know, so, <it's>, but she's probably not listening because she, well, we'll see. I'll be sure to find out if she is.
You'll know soon, actually.
Oh, it's risky to say these things. But I'm happily married. So, and living far away from, anyway.
Stop. Just, we should stop this now. Let me do a quick intervention here. Stop. Okay.
Done. What I was going to say was, that the, this very remark was given to me, in relation to, an even newer book, but that's not out yet. So The End of Heaven is just come out last week, and so that's available now. But the latest book that I have just written and sent up to the publisher yesterday is called The Safety Anarchist, and so which makes an argument that we need to push back on this triumph of bureaucracy and compliance to create more space for human innovation and expertise and the dignity of people who know how to actually do a job. And to me, it's an argument that I can get very passionate about, obviously, and would love to talk more about. But that's for another podcast.
Let's
but
do
there's
that.
one remark that I wanted to share with you, and that is when I showed that to some people, the blowback I got from that particular group was amazing. You know, how can this man believe that workers who get killed on the job were good workers? That is preposterous. And Todd, I even failed to, I mean, I really tried to be empathetic and put myself in the shoes of other people and try to see the world through their eyes and understand their perspective. But I hit the limit on that one.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
boom. as in, if you're killed at work, you must have been a shitty worker.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that the inverted logic. You know, the Book of Job is comments on that quite nicely, yeah, by the way. But that's another podcast. So yes, we should talk, because I think what I would really love to do, and I think we are on the cusp of creating an awesome opportunity, is to sit with you and a bunch of people who want to take part in this conversation and just dig through some of this stuff and lay out some of these ideas. And so tell me more. What's the opportunity that we might have?
The opportunity is Ron Gann at SCM in the Bay Area, United States, West Coast, has secured June 9th.
Okay.
That's a Friday, June 9th, which is a perfect time to go to the Bay Area, because then that gives you Saturday to go to Alcatraz or Muir Woods. Or, I mean, there's great things to do. Wine country is not very far away. It has secured a day and has opened up a small conversation, a mini conference, if you will. Pretty informal. It's just you and I. It's available.
Wow.
It's in San Ramon, which is just kind of right over the hill in East Bay. You could fly into San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland is a great airport, and hang out with us. It's going to be, I think, $400. Most of that pays for the very expensive conference facilities in the Bay Area, because everything costs a lot.
It's ridiculous.
But I think it's an opportunity just to kind of hang out with you. And I think, like you just said, I think we keep it pretty unstructured. People can prepare questions before.
That's a good idea, actually. Yeah.
And having those questions prepared before will allow us the opportunity to just get to as many places as we need to go with this group of people. But I think mostly it's a chance to really sit with a community of people who have like thoughts or who are exploring like thoughts, build that community and create an environment where we can learn and sort of learn with each other. And
nice.
I think it sounds super fun. I hope people take advantage of it.
My mother-in-law likely will not.
Well, Ron and SCM have gone to quite a bit of work to get this kicked off, and I'm so happy they did that. But I'm more happy to have the opportunity to have you in the United States, and it works perfectly between a couple of corporate gigs that you're doing where people aren't invited. I mean, in fact,
quite.
In fact, can't come.
Not
in fact,
thin.
The answer to that is no. But this this one, they can come bring their Jeremy boss if they want to, or not bring their boss. It's just an opportunity to create sort of a learning environment. I see it more of in kind of a seminar European style model than some kind of conference where there's 426 PowerPoints and one speaker every 12 minutes. It's really much, much more of an opportunity to sit and talk and share ideas, maybe argue a little. That would be kind of fun.
That's good. That's good. No. But the last thing you and I want to be, we don't want to be proven right. That's no fun.
Being right, nobody loves anything. Yeah. Being right is about as boring as, that's just not very valuable.
No. I mean, of course, I've learned that you can either be right or stay married. I mean, that's a different
setting. I am so proud of you. You're maturing into such a nice young man. I'm so pleased.
Nice young man.
Such a nice young man.
My eldest son has left the house.
I know.
Man, now he's still young. So there you go.
But I think it sounds fun, and it's a great, bring your books if you want to get stuff signed. I mean, it's that kind of day. I think it'll just be really informal. It'll be a super great opportunity to dig as deeply as we want to. I can pretty much promise that you'll leave with many pages of notes. So bring your notebooks when you come. But I think it's great. Anything you want to add to that, Sydney? Are we missing anything in this invitation?
It's called, I think, Safety Differently with Sydney Decker and Todd Conklin.
That's a very clever name.
That's what I thought. Yeah. So how to think about safety differently. And I look forward to kicking off that conversation with whoever wants to come, Todd. And as you say, bring questions, bring your own ideas. Be prepared to be challenged on them yourself, right? I mean, don't come with a question that would irritate me is, but what about complacency? And those are just not really informed questions. And so you and I both have pretty good standards for how we do want to discuss these things and what we believe is meaningful.
Right.
But everybody is welcome, and all the concerns are welcome, because that's ultimately, if what you and I do, Todd, has no impact on the people who need to sort through these struggles on a daily basis and work this out in their workplaces, why do it? Then writing and talking about this just becomes completely self-indulgent.
Couldn't agree more. I think you're right on. It'll be fun too. I think we can guarantee fun.
We can even do a PowerPoint if people say, now we're tired of live here with something,
I'm not sure that's what they want, but okay.
There you go. Well, on last count, I think I've got 11 books now, and you've got what? Three, four?
Three and a new one coming out. So
three. So four in your head. Well, three out and one more in your head. And so, or sort of in the computer. So that makes what, 15 books total.
Yeah.
That's like a book per half hour. That's we'll have plenty of topics to talk about.
Oh yeah. That's not a problem. That's not a problem at all. Well, so let's just, let's make an invitation. Sydney, would you invite people to come and see you on the 9th?
To whoever is listening, I would love you to travel to the Bay Area and to come meet me personally and say hi to Todd as well, whom you might've already met. And to see Todd and me in action, 9th of June. It's a Friday, San Ramon, California. Hope to see you there.
So what'd you think? Told you. I really, really found his description of that book super interesting. It really is. I mean, this is not when I got to look. I looked at a part of it early, I'll be honest with you, but this was really a fun podcast. Thanks for listening. And I'd love to see you June 9th too, if you can make it. If you can't, we'll think of you and, maybe record it or so. I don't know. I haven't even thought that far ahead. But if you can get there, if it's not too hard for you to get there, and it is kind of nice because it's a Friday, so you can hang out over the weekend, come and join us. You're welcome. We'd love to have you. I tried to keep the price down as low as I could just to make it totally attainable and
special thanks to Ron Gant and to Puccini and to Sidney Decker and to you. I hope you get what you need. That's really becoming important to me this whole year. I've thought about that and thought about that. Have as much fun as you possibly can. Learn something new every single day. I bet you did today. And for goodness sakes, be safe.